ethnicity. He wasn't like me, who could track her roots back to Anglo-Saxons and Vikings. He was a mismatch of origins, enticingly exotic. He was handsome and staring right at me, staring as if he didn't expect a girl to be here, a slave who'd well and truly forgotten the outside world. I dropped my gaze, encouraging a sheet of hair to obscure the remnants of bruising on my cheekbone. I hadn't been anywhere, or seen anything new in 2 years. Until this man. Stopping before the stranger as he stood stiffly from the couch, Master A grunted.
I thought I'd add one more to our dinner arrangement, if you don't mind.
Digging his fingernails into my elbow, he smiled cordially.
This is my girlfriend, Pimlico.
The man raised an eyebrow, drawing my attention from his hair and eyes to the rest of his symmetrically masculine face. His nose held just enough authority without being too big. His chin was square enough to expose every clench of his teeth, and his throat powerful enough to reveal every swallow, rippling with sinew and muscle. My eyes followed his neck, following the contours of his flawless skin until it disappeared beneath a dark grey shirt, with the collar unbuttoned. He wore a casual black blazer, as if he'd shrugged into it at the last minute while shopping at Armani or Gucci, and his long legs put him a half a head taller than Master A, who already towered over my shorter frame. Only, where Master A made me feel small and defenseless, this new man didn't. I couldn't describe it. I'd often heard my high school friends mentioning some sort of kismet reaction when they met their boyfriends, but I'd never felt it. My heart turned traitor as the man tilted his head, his eyes never leaving mine. He moved like liquid, as if he held the power to drown everyone with a mere drop, or eradicate entire landscapes with a tsunami. I couldn't breathe as he bent forward in a slight bow, holding out his hand. Every motion was oiled and perfected, sex appeal surrounding him like a fine mist. I flinched. Why did he look at me as if I was worth something? Couldn't he see he'd get me into trouble if Master A deemed I'd received gifts I wasn't due? My shoulders rolled as I glanced at the white tiles beneath my feet. Master A crushed me to his side with a warning squeeze.
Shake Mr. Prest's hand, Pim.
Shake it. I'd forgotten such social niceties. For 2 years, an outstretched palm meant incoming pain, not a common introduction. What the hell was going on? If I hadn't played Master A's games for so long, I might have bowed to his wishes, hoping that tonight would have a happier outcome than other times. But I couldn't deny I'd been his for too many years, and no longer believed in hope. I couldn't avoid pain, no matter what I did. So why should I do anything at all? He might want me to shake so he could scream at me for touching another man against his wishes, or he would berate me for not obeying. Either way, the consequences were the same. I won't do it. Cocking my head, I locked eyes with Mr. Prest and crossed my arms. Daryl, Monty, and Tony snickered on the couch, knowing what I did, that I would be hurt, badly, once this interloper had left. Tony cackled.
Ah, shit, you're gonna get... enough.
Master A snapped, silencing the potential slip. His face blanched, matching the blonde strands on his head. Interesting. It wasn't a charade. He truly didn't want this man to know. My heart did its best to shrug off its death shroud and find hope once again. For so long, it packed up its stepladder and parachute, settling in for guerrilla warfare as I stayed alive by following fucked-up rules. But now, it shook off dust and battle debris, glowing with tentative crimson. If I remembered how to use my voice, I might have informed this mysterious Mr. Press that he'd just walked into a sex prison. He willingly made friends with these animals, who shared and hurt and gave no thought to the soul screaming silently inside me. But 2 years was a long time, and a blurted word was as foreign to me as being free. Dropping his unshaken hand, Mr. Press scowled. His gaze danced over me, his face hiding his thoughts, but unable to thwart his questions. Just like I wanted to know who he was, he wanted to know me. I fought the urge to drop my eyes, but the fierce intensity in which he studied me granted courage, rather than stripped it. I never looked away as his black gaze switched from my closed-off posture, lingered on my nipples visible through the white polo, and skated to Master A's arm clutching me tightly. His lips thinned as a dark conclusion dawned on his face. I wanted to applaud him, give him a damn award for noticing that not everything was as it seemed. But then, whatever realization he'd come to vanished, as he grinned, just as cold, just as evil, just as nastily as Master A and his associates.
Hello, Pym.
Pym. Just like that, he shortened my name as if he knew me. My crossed arms tightened. You don't know me. You will never know me. His gaze drifted to my shoulders where my muscles twitched. Not that I had much muscle anymore. I'd wasted away thanks to one meal a day, and only if I earned it. I hadn't seen the sun in 2 years, unless it was through the window. I hadn't felt a breeze in 2 years unless it was from an air conditioning unit. The craving I'd had in the trafficking hotel for outdoors was just as insistent here, where marble had replaced 70s carpet and Egyptian cotton sheets had switched overly starchy white. The black despair of living permanently beneath my strength threatened to throttle me. My heart kicked my other organs as if trying to wake me up or kill me, forcing a reaction that I'd long since ordered to remain hidden. This stranger might be the only one I'd ever see before I died. I'd never again inhale a flower's fragrance or taste a raindrop on my tongue. I gasped as an impending panic attack swirled. For a year and a half, I'd been able to control my hysteria. But a few months ago, I'd suffered such a vast void of horror and despair, Master A was forced to call a private doctor, who didn't ask questions, to ensure I wasn't dying of heart failure. I'd been diagnosed as severely depressed with panic tendencies. I was grateful for a diagnosis, but full of hatred that the strong teenager I'd been was now nothing more than an emotional, wrung-out wreck, no matter how brave I forced myself to be. Master A clutched me harder, hissing in my ear.
Get it together, Pym. You will not have an attack while company is present.
If I could control it, I'd obey. There was nothing good about revealing just how deep my fear went. But the once crashing, smashing breathlessness gripped me. I was swept away. Gulping, I clawed at the tight cotton around my throat. I can't breathe. I need air. I need to run and run and run. His weapon-like fingers dragged me to the side.
Calm down.
I can't. I can't. Memories of inky, sleepy death corrupted me. I recalled what it was like to see the last thing I'd ever see and feel the last thing I'd ever feel. Suppressed recollections of being strangled and waking up in the sex-trafficked nightmare swarmed. Stop. Make it stop. My choking turned to open mouth, gasping. Master A manhandled me across the lounge to stuff me somewhere where I wouldn't embarrass him. Mr. Prest followed in our wake. As I stumbled through the doorway to the corridor, a cold voice demanded,
Let her go.
Master A froze, looking over his shoulder. With angry hands, he spun me to face the stranger.
This is no concern of yours.
I can't breathe. Clutching my chest, I rode out the confused double beats of my heart. According to the doctor, I had the power to stop the attack by reminding myself that my current situation wouldn't change, no matter how I felt about it. I had no reason to stress when I couldn't reverse the circumstance. He had the audacity to say that. To me. The mute slave girl who was beaten, raped, and starved on a daily basis. I was fully justified in my terror. I was just as surprised the attacks only started a few months ago, and not the day I'd been sold. Oh, God. 2 years. 2 long, long years. I folded in half, holding my chest, doing my best to keep my soul from jackhammering free. While trapped in the middle of an episode, my head roared, my heart hopscotched, and all I wanted to do was die. Stopping the horror and becoming calm again seemed like an impossibility. I can't handle 2 more years. I can't even handle 2 more days. Mr. Prest cocked his head, running a hand over his shadowy jaw. Everything about him boycotted the white starkness of Master A's mansion, bringing blackness into its corridors.
If you want to do business, Ulrich, consider this my concern.
His eyes trailed over me. He wasn't sympathetic toward my suffering, merely cold and mildly annoyed. His eyebrow rose with an aristocratic arch as my lips cooled to blue and my gasping turned haggard. He watched me as if I were a circus freak, putting on a performance just for him. A performance he didn't like. Ignoring Master A, still struggling to keep me upright and not kneeling on the floor as I wanted, Mr. Prest murmured harshly.
Stop it.
I wanted to scream, to shout, to speak, to show him I was a human and not something he could command. But I shriveled beneath his heavy glare, slouching in the biting fingers of my owner. Being reprimanded wasn't new. The only conversation I endured was snide comments, snapped orders, and putrid curses. So it didn't shock me that this stranger was the same as them. No kind words or commiseration. No empathy or ability to see past the lies and understand the truth. Even if he could, why should he care? I was nothing to him. Just a rebellious toy, swiftly becoming tiresome and ready for replacement. Master A shook me, hissing in my ear.
You heard our guest. Stop it.
Yanking me closer, he added so only I would hear.
You think this behavior will go unpunished? Silly, silly Pim. Tonight, your back will be shredded, scars on top of scars.
I convulsed, breaking his tight fingers and slithering to the floor. No, no, no. Get it together. Breathe. My entire body shook as I tore at the cotton around my throat. My broken fingernails scratched painful slices over my skin as I finally managed to grab the offending clothing, rejoicing in the crack of ripping material. The clinging neckline opened as I shredded and slashed. I didn't stop until the white top hung open and gaping, revealing the whip lacerations, painful scabs, and silver scars on my chest from belonging to a troll like Master A. Mr. Press stiffened. I daren't look up, but his thighs locked into steel tree trunks, tightening his black trousers. The soft rustle of his blazer hinted he no longer watched as a bystander, but as a witness to my ruin. Once upon a time, I would have hidden my bare chest, tried to cover my nipples, be demure and shy. Now, I didn't care. After so long with no clothing, I was more comfortable naked. I couldn't stand anyone or anything touching me. Touch, just like speaking, had become taboo. It only brought pain, not pleasure. Master A yanked me upright, his hands fierce and unyielding beneath my arms.
What the fuck did you do?
His temper built like a blizzard, swirling with hail and sleet. I shivered, waiting for the Arctic freeze. But Mr. Press stepped forward. Shrugging out of his blazer, he ignored my master as he draped the material over my half-naked form. I flinched, dreading the slightest touch. But nothing came. He gave me his jacket, still warm and smelling richly of heady incense and something exotically spicy. But he did it all without a single finger graze. I froze. I drowned. The act of kindness threatened to send me into another panic attack. I slouched beneath the weight, so unused to heavy heat smothering me. One heartbeat demanded, "Get it off!" The next remembered what my flesh had forgotten. It recalled how nice it was to be protected. Don't take it away.
Get that off her, Mr. Prest.
Master A growled.
She'll run upstairs and dress in her own things, won't you, Pim?
With what? I had no other clothes. But Mr. Prest didn't know that, and I waited with eyes downcast, my heart burning at the thought of having the one element of comfort I'd been given in so long taken away. All I wanted to do was slip my arms into the wide, beckoning sleeves, fall to the floor and hug myself. I wanted to curl into a chrysalis, protected by my blazer armor, and re-emerge so much braver and bolder than before, with paper wings and powder beauty able to soar me far, far away. At least the shock of Mr. Prest sharing his wardrobe interrupted my nerves. Adrenaline stopped crackling through my veins. I did my best to breathe rather than asphyxiate. Mr. Prest crossed his arms, his dark grey shirt pushed up to his elbows, revealing ropey muscles and a tattooed bracelet with Japanese characters around his wrist.
She can keep it.
Master A glowered, digging his fingernails into my shoulder as he directed me toward the staircase.
No, she can't. Why?
Mr. Press slouched against the door jamb, never taking his black eyes from me.
Because I said so.
Master A shoved me toward the bottom step.
She'll be back down as soon as she's changed.
I stumbled, the loose jacket fluttering like clouds behind me. Mr. Press lowered his jaw, watching from shadowed features.
I want to hear it from her.
Master A froze.
What?
Mr. Prest pointed in my direction. His liquidity and grace came across as bored and uninterested, but a vein of lethalness simmered beneath.
Her. I want to hear it from her.
I spun to face the man, soaking up the wrongful whiteness around him. We made eye contact before I remembered my place and stared at the ground. Master A dragged stiff fingers through his blonde hair.
You don't understand, Elder. She doesn't speak.
Mr. Press snapped into stealthy power.
Don't think we're on first-name basis, Ulrich, and certainly don't take liberties not given to you.
My back bunched. No one spoke to Master A like that and got away with it. But the unthinkable happened. Master A swallowed his curse-filled retort, nodding respectfully.
Of course, my apologies.
Moving toward Mr. Prest, he waved over his guest's shoulder.
Perhaps we should begin the evening again. We have a nice meal planned. Let's eat, shall we? No.
Mr. Prest didn't budge from the doorway.
I want to know what the fuck is going on.
Master A's eyes bugged. If I weren't so afraid of the man being disciplined, I would have enjoyed this change of events. But I knew I would be the one who ultimately paid once the stranger had left.
Nothing is going on.
Mr. Prest cocked his head, a cold smile on his lips.
Lies. I don't do business with liars. I'm not lying. Then let her speak.
Mr. Prest's eyes latched onto mine again.
Pimlico, tell me yourself. Do you want to keep my jacket, or would you prefer to wear your own clothes?
His gaze drifted to the nasty white skirt I wore, barely hiding anything.
You have odd taste in fashion, but I won't judge. You may wear what you wish. Not that it's my place to direct you.
His glower landed on Master A.
But then again, neither is it the place of your boyfriend to order you how to dress.
His accent teased at the corners of my mind, reminding me of wealthy travelers in foreign places. The way he said boyfriend made me stiffen. I was right. He did understand. He saw through the bullshit and knew what I was. My heart jumped into an ocean of tears. Why did that hurt me so much? To be seen as what I was? For the stranger to never know me as happy, confident Tamsin, but as beaten, ugly Pimlico?
Answer me,
Mr. Press said.
My jacket or your own?
The question didn't prompt me to reply. After 2 years of muteness, a query no longer held such power. My larynx didn't prepare to speak. My lungs didn't inflate to talk. I had no urge to vocalize. My body stiffened as I focused on Mr. Press' powerful jaw and throat. I'd guess he had foreign blood in him somewhere in his lineage. It wasn't a strong part of his features, but his eyes were too beautifully almond to be strictly European. The three of us stood in tense silence. Mr. Press slowly exhaled, his temper overshadowing Master A's, turning the white blizzard into a dark typhoon.
Speak.
Master A chuckled.
I tried to tell you.
Tell me what?
She doesn't talk.
Master A waved in my direction as if I were faulty goods, and only good for the torture he put me through.
She's mute. Through choice or medical condition.
Whoa, what? The personal question hacked through the silence like a machete. Master A grinned, slowly gaining control of the situation now attention was back on him.
Ever since we got together, she's been mute. You see, when I found her, she was so broken. She didn't know how to act normally. I thought it endearing, and I've done my best to help heal her.
He ran his hand over my scalp, petting me with false affection.
But, of course, these things take time and a lot of patience.
What an utter load of
Bullshit.
Mr. Prest barked. The fact he'd stolen the word from my mind and delivered it with as much contempt and disbelief as I would have made my heart hop with a pink skipping rope. Laughing coldly, Mr. Prest added,
Heal? Those scars and cuts on her skin aren't old.
Stalking forward, he towered over Master A.
They're recent. Care to lie about how that happened?
Master A shrugged, doing his best to come across as unruffled.
A number of things were wrong with her. Being mute is only one of them.
Wow, he's claiming I hurt myself now? I wanted to get angry, but I had nothing but disgusted acceptance left. Would Mr. Prest believe him if I tore off his blazer and revealed my whipped back, bruised inner thighs and cigarette-burned ass cheeks? Or would it take deeper evidence, such as the god-awful internal injuries I sustained from non-consequential items being thrust into my body? Mr. Prest paused, looking me up and down.
I don't believe you. No one would self-harm to that extent.
His face blackened.
And believe me, I know.
How does he know? Was that a veiled hint that he self-harmed? Beneath his expensive tailored clothes, was he as scarred as I was? Somehow I doubted it. However, his hands did hold injuries, both new and old. Overhead lights flickered over silver wounds and knuckle bruising. He used them for business other than introduction with assholes. Master A's temper gathered ferocity.
Well, you don't have to fucking believe me. She's my girlfriend. I figured you might like some female company, because I heard you've been at sea for months. But this is fucking ridiculous. I don't need the third degree.
Waving his arm, he growled.
She's mine, got it? Not yours. Forget you ever saw her.
Directing his wrath upon me, he ordered.
Upstairs, Pim. Now.
The obedience he'd beaten into me kicked in. Turning on the bottom step, I grabbed the banister to climb away. Only, Mr. Press snapped.
Stop.
Storming forward, he snatched my wrist and yanked me down the stairs. No! I didn't want to be in the middle of whatever power trip this was. I wanted to bolt back to my room and tell no one of how confusing this meeting had been. I wanted to inhale Mr. Press's blazer in private and give in to the scalding tears left over from my panic attack. But it didn't matter what I wanted. It never did. I became the rope in a nasty tug of war. His fingers were just as cruel as Master A's as he tightened his grip and pulled me close. Too close. Far too close. The mint decadence of his breath smarted my eyes.
Tell me your story now.
I looked at the floor. Master A abducted me from his guest's hold.
What the fuck is your problem? She's mute, I just told you.
Mr. Prest shoved a finger in Master A's face.
My problem is I don't do business with people I don't understand.
His eyes narrowed.
And I don't understand where she fits in.
Master A shoved me against the wall. He did it in a way that spoke of authority and almost protection from an aggressive stranger in our supposed happy home. However, Mr. Press saw the truth as I wobbled, reaching for something firm for purchase. Grabbing my free arm as I fought to stay standing, Mr. Press growled.
You start talking.
Master A struggled to hold me, a battle of possession on my flesh.
Let her go. If you want to complete our transaction, you'll shut the fuck up.
Mr. Press's voice dropped to a scary whisper.
Think hard, Ulrich. Is sharing your girlfriend too much to pay for what you truly want?
Slowly, a calculating gleam filled Master A's water-blue gaze.
Share?
He chuckled, raising an eyebrow in my direction. To someone unknown, that look would hint at undecided decisions. To me, who'd been shared every damn day for years, it was a threat. A forgone contract that before the night was over, Elder Prest would have sampled me, used me, and ultimately destroyed me with hate as much as he had with kindness.
You're right.
Master A unlocked his fingers, removing his resistance. I ricocheted forward, tumbling against Mr. Prest's sculpted body. The moment I smashed against him, I recoiled. He wasn't different. He was the same, and I had no wish to be close to him or any man. Master A puffed out his chest, crossing his arms.
Is sharing an official requirement to complete our deal?
My mismatched hair hung over my face as Mr. Prest manhandled me around his body, placing me behind him. His arm clamped tight, keeping me wedged against his hard back.
You really are a sick fuck.
Energy and untapped power siphoned down his spine as he chuckled, infecting me with whatever insanity he suffered. Because he had to be insane. He protected me from Master A, all while discussing sharing me to complete a business transaction. Who does that? No one I wanted to be around. A year ago I might have struggled, bit his wrist for the chance to be free. But just like I'd evolved in obedience to survive, I learned that antagonizing for no reason wasn't smart. Master A spread his hands.
Rather offensive thing to say. I'm not judging you, so I'd appreciate it if you don't judge me.
Looking over my shoulder, my skin crawled to find Daryl, Tony, and Monty had repositioned themselves to stand behind Mr. Prest, ready to maim or kill him if he threatened their friend. I squeezed my eyes, deliberately avoiding what would come next. However, I'd underestimated Mr. Prest. Almost as if he sensed the imminent attack, he stepped back, forcing me to move with him until he entered the lounge and spun to face the three men, pinning me against the wall. He faced them all as Master A stalked to stand with his evil accomplices. Mr. Prest clenched his jaw, his eyes hooded and dark.
Let's start this again, with the fucking truth.
Yanking me from behind his back, he placed me beside him.
She's a whore.
I jolted at the word. I hated that word. It conjured such sad and broken things. But I wasn't that. I was a daughter, a student, a friend. I was smart. I'd been pretty once. I meant something. Master A shared a glance with Tony before smiling.
She's more than a whore. I bought her, fair and square. So she's a slave.
Mr. Press didn't phrase it as a question. Somehow he'd known all along what I was the second he saw me. I'm his slave, it's true. But I don't want to be. Master A stared at his guest for a long moment before his shoulders relaxed and a broad smile split his face.
She's a slave, a whore, a slut. She's whatever you want.
Coming forward, he held out his hand a second time.
Meet Pimlico, my possession, and you have full invitation to use her.
No. My eyes flew to Mr. Prest, hoping like hell the proposition abhorred him, that he'd rather walk out the door than deal with such awful people and take me with him. But the tense standoff ended as he accepted Master A's handshake, smiling coldly.
That's more like it.
Breaking the introduction, Mr. Press slung his arm over my blazer cloak shoulders.
Why didn't you say that before?
Don't.
That makes this evening a lot more interesting. Elder. This place stank of lies and deceit. And that said something, seeing as I was the one who usually had the most to hide. This asshole had cleared most of my vetting channels, but my research hadn't revealed a live-in girlfriend. Definitely not a mute girlfriend. Yet, she's neither of those things. She was a beaten, broken whore. A slave. I'd seen some shit in my past. I'd committed crimes. I'd done my fair share of filth. But I'd never met someone who thought they could own a human soul before. Part of me wanted to unleash every wrath he had owing, but the other, a stronger part, was intrigued. Distancing myself from Pimlico, I couldn't deny my flesh heated at the fragility of her bones. I couldn't look away from the translucency of her skin, with its map of blue veins and red arteries. Balling my hands, I took another step. Her breathing fluttered, not as a flirt, but in fear. That was not a good thing. Not where I was concerned. Over the years of my dominion, I'd earned a name that had paved the gold brick road into the underbelly of this sick and twisted world. Kaito, Phantom Thief. First, because I was a pickpocket, robber, and five-fingered master. Second, because instead of stealing objects, I started stealing lives. But only those lives owed to me, or those too feeble to be of any use. What category does she fall into? She was feeble, but not useless. Something about her got under my skin, itching with an intolerable curiosity. Where did she come from? How long had she been here? And just how long had she wanted to die? The look in her eyes was a classic invitation for death. I took another step away from the slave girl, just in case. I saw strength in her, but I also tasted the yearning for her end. Once someone enticed thoughts of suicide into their soul, it was there to stay, slowly corrupting them until they found their way back to life or gave in and let demise claim them. I'd underestimated Ulrich Asbjorn. He'd kept this woman alive for who the fuck knew how long, even when her wish to die echoed with every heartbeat. That was impressive. The sharp thrill knowing I could do anything I wanted to this girl with no repercussions disgusted me. I could hurt her, fuck her, treat her with no bloody respect. And she could only accept it because that was her place. Her bought and sold place. I could kill her, and she'd probably thank me for setting her free. Maybe I should. Perhaps I will. Depending on how the evening and our transaction went, I might steal her life and keep it as a trinket, a token, for yet another shadowy deal struck with monsters.
Let's eat!
Ulrich grinned, strolling toward the 8-seater table positioned beneath a generic chandelier. His house irritated me. The stark white, the impersonal walls and sterile furniture. I preferred personality in my decor. Why live in a box this soulless? He might as well live in a fucking coffin. Ulrich's friends took their seats, not waiting for the guest of honor, me, to sit first. My lips tightened at the lack of courtesy and respect. My culture demanded such things. Even when I lived on the fucking streets as an unwanted rat, I'd remembered what my elders had taught me. Reverence for those wiser, older, and smarter than you. Appreciation for those kinder, gentler, and nicer than you, and utmost worship for those who cold fucking annihilate you with a single thought. Grasping the back of the chair, I looked over my shoulder at the wraith of a slave as she faded into the background. Judging by her current well-being, I'd say she'd become a master at accepting pain. She was like me in that respect, and because of that, she earned my interest. She wasn't just a possession, but a puzzle, ready to be deciphered. Sinking to her knees on the hard white tiles, she bowed her head. Even with my blazer covering her stark skeleton, her malnourished body imprinted beneath it. My jacket looked 5 times too big for her. Her hair was a disgusting brown mop with no style. Her green eyes resembled a swamp, and her skin hinted as if she bordered scurvy. She wasn't healthy. Why didn't she speak? And why did her defiant thoughts scream so much louder than words? How could she remain so impertinent when she rang the doorbell of death with eager fingers? Tearing my gaze away, I glared at the unwanted guests around the table. Ulrich assured me, when we set up the meeting, that it would be just him and me. Not 3 other bastards and 1 silent girl. I'd put up with it through dinner because I refused to talk business while eating, and never when drinking. But the moment the food was consumed, they had to fuck off. My back stiffened as precautions filled me. Could he have poisoned the meal? Thanks to my tireless research, I knew he didn't cook, that his chef service provided delicacies every night. I had to trust he wouldn't slip ricin into my main course, purely because of his ego and what he wanted from me. If Ulrich did, by some imbecile decision, try to dispatch me rather than do business, I was ready. He wouldn't be the first to try to kill me, and he wouldn't be the last. However, the trail of cadavers left in my wake would steadily grow longer as I proved I was invincible. Sitting down, I readjusted my silverware, running eager digits over the serrated knife. I could murder everyone in this room before 1 scream was uttered. Perhaps I should. Maybe I will. Before the night was through. Ulrich remained standing, opening bags of gourmet food and serving us with each element. Bok choy with oyster sauce, Peking duck, Singapore noodles, and wontons. The scents replaced the blandness of the monochromatic space with welcome. Finally, he sat at the top of the table and smiled.
Eat, enjoy.
As he arranged his napkin, I looked once more at the girl. She hadn't budged. Her head remained bowed, her eyes locked on a speck in front of her. Picking up my fork, I pointed at her. You don't feed your slave? Ulrich slurped a mouthful of noodles, no longer trying to hide the truth.
She gets fed when she's behaved. She knows that.
He raised his voice so the girl could hear.
And tonight, she didn't. That unsightly episode before is not tolerated.
He grinned, stabbing a piece of duck.
She'll eat tomorrow.
I agreed. A naughty pet ought to be punished. But she wasn't just a pet. She was a human being, and I wasn't done inspecting her. I need her closer. I ordered. Invite her to eat with us. Ulrich and his friends froze, food half-chewed or dangling on their forks.
What?
Invite her to eat. She's hungry.
But this is a business dinner. I won't have it sullied by her.
This is not business. This is merely a social nicety to feel as if we've bonded before our transaction is concluded. If it were up to me, I would have arrived to find you alone, as per our discussion, and left a few minutes later, rather than this fucking spectacle. My chin lowered as my temper siphoned through my veins. You're the one who changed the rules. Now I want to change them for my benefit. Let her eat. Ulrich's fair skin turned puce with anger. I smiled, just waiting for an outburst, any outburst. I'd happily teach him a lesson that he would never win with me. Ever. Slowly he put down his utensils and looked at his whore.
Pimlico, grab a plate and join us. I've changed my mind. You can eat tonight.
I didn't turn around, but her gasp trickled down my nape, making me shiver. It was too easy. Hunting was a lot of fun, just like thievery. The trick to pulling off a great heist was to gain the trust of your intended victim first. Trust me, Pim. Let me steal your secrets. Ulrich had tried to do that by luring me to dinner with his friends, but he couldn't mask his eager greediness for what I could offer him. Pimlico, on the other hand, bought my sanctuary with every heartbeat, hauling herself into a standing position and shuffling into the kitchen. I didn't move as the sounds of collected crockery and the clink of knives and forks echoed in the white space. Her footfalls were as quiet as a shadow as she hesitantly approached the table. I narrowed my eyes as she kept her vision on the floor, holding her plate like a shield. Alric's friends snickered, sucking on beer bottles, enjoying her discomfort far too fucking much. I didn't need to ask to know they'd taken from this girl, too. They were responsible for some of the bruises and scars decorating her body. Alric sighed heavily, rolling his eyes. "Well, sit, Pim. Fuck, don't just lurk there like a freak." Instantly, she darted forward and slipped gracefully into the chair beside me. Either deliberate or subconscious, the fact she'd chosen to sit so close did strange things to my insides. Half of me wanted to stroke her cheek and promise that as long as she wore my jacket, I'd protect her, while the other half wanted to see how pretty her tears would look falling into her dinner. Tearing my gaze from her sad face, I stole her empty plate and replaced it with my untouched full one. She sucked in a breath as I nudged the delicious-smelling food closer. I didn't speak. I didn't need to. She knew what I offered, and she'd accept, if she knew what was fucking good for her. Alric's fork clattered to the tablecloth, smearing garlic sauce and oil.
"Wait, she can have a sandwich. There isn't enough food for..."
I held up my hand with a sharp glare. "I'm not hungry. She is. Problem solved. Besides, there was a power in not eating when everyone else was. I had the freedom to stare and calculate. I could ask questions and probe, all while they swallowed inconvenient mouthfuls, scrambling for lies. No, this was perfect. I got to do a good deed, something I was sorely lacking, and I also got to put these men on the back foot. Let the interrogation begin.
Pimlico. I couldn't look up. Whiffs of delicious food made eternal hunger snarl. Is this real? Was I truly sitting on a chair at the table, with a plate in front of me? Was it a cruel joke where Master A would snatch away the meal, as he sometimes did for spite? I shuddered, remembering last month how he'd made me crawl after him for miles, up and down the stairs, along tiled corridors, taunting me with my dog bowl full of spaghetti carbonara. I'd wanted those rich, creamy noodles more than anything and hated what I did when he finally stopped and demanded I suck him in return for my dinner. The flavor of his cum had ruined the reward. I never wanted carbonara again. My fingers shook around the utensils as I forced myself to recall the mechanics. How could I forget something as simple as using a fork? And if I couldn't remember, what would Mr. Press think of me? He'll see a whore and a heathen, an untrained slave with awful table manners. Why did I suddenly want to be noticed, instead of forgotten, recognized instead of alone? Why did this man make me come more alive than I had in years? Fighting my tremble, I raised a mouthful to my lips. The food tasted like cardboard, even though I knew from eating scraps off Master A's plate that the ordered menus were 5-star gourmet. My taste buds were in shock. My mind, my body, everything in tentative anticipation thanks to the stranger beside me. I couldn't breathe without inhaling Mr. Press's heady, exotic scent. I couldn't move without brushing against his powerful arm or teasing myself with his warm blazer draped over my shoulders. I couldn't blink without thinking all of this would disappear, vanish, poof. I'd never been allowed at the table before, never been given a fork or knife or plate. I'd definitely never been treated as a person by a man who overshadowed Master A in every way. I was grateful. I felt alive. I both hated and thanked Mr. Prest for it. Every mouthful, I expected Master A to scream and throw something at me. I already felt the kick and the coldness of the floor, pressing against my cheek as he held my face down. The awful games he played, the demeaning tasks he forced me to do. This was just a minor blip of kindness in a world of torture. The food slid tastelessly into my belly, but the decadent richness made me feel sick. My system wasn't used to such opulence. But I wouldn't stop eating. I couldn't. I would devour every piece, slurp every noodle, and then lick my plate if I could get away with it. My mouth watered as a faint memory interrupted. Of Japanese sushi and soy sauce, of cheeseburgers and French fries. It seemed so long ago. Had I truly been allowed to go where I wanted whenever I pleased? Did I really laugh and find happiness? I was so naive. Master A lifted his wine, toasty Mr. Prest.
Cheers to exciting business ventures and new friends.
Ugh, what an ass. I didn't blink or frown, but inwardly I stuck out my tongue and gave him the finger. The smarminess, the fake charm. He was a reptile and utterly cold-blooded. Only Mr. Prest didn't return the toast, merely tilted his head, leaving Master A hanging and forced to take an awkward sip of alcohol. Tony cleared his throat as everyone focused intently on their food. The clink of knives and forks was the only noise apart from the classical music raining from overhead speakers. Master A liked music. Considering just two of us lived here, it was never quiet. I hated it. My synapses had associated classical notes with torture, and I couldn't listen to a piano or violin without reliving his cock driving inside me or his fists pummeling my skin. Master A sneered in my direction, slurping a mouthful of noodles. His rage at my position beside his guest hissed down the table. The fork shook in my hands. I lived here for so long, yet I couldn't predict my jailer. My imagination painted countless punishments for defying him, but I'd be surprised. Like always, Master A liked to think outside the box where I was concerned.
How long has it been since you ate?
The question wrenched me from my thoughts. I blinked, stupidly forgetting myself and turning my head to the source. Mr. Prest stared back. His dark eyes didn't budge, doing their best to tear every secret I had left. Pointing at my plate, he said,
You eat like a bird. Yet I know you're starving.
My heart breathed into a paper bag with worry. It'd been so long since someone looked at me as a person rather than a doll, but it was too late. With far too many witnesses, I was more possession than anything else these days. My gaze flickered to Master A. The outrage on his face wasn't because of something I'd done, but because I'd attracted the attention of someone he wanted to deny.
Don't ask things you're not privy answers to.
Master A slammed his knife onto the table.
I take care of her. That's all you need to know.
My blood incinerated with hatred for the history between us, for all the monstrous things he'd done. Took care of me? What a crock of shit. Mr. Prest froze, his straight spine vibrating with ruthless energy.
I asked her a question. I don't need you replying for her. And I told you before she will never answer you. She answers me just fine.
Wait, what? My gaze danced between the men. How had I answered him? And why would he say such things? Couldn't he see my refusal to communicate drove Master A berserk? He'd kill me if he thought I spoke to another and not him.
Leave what isn't yours alone, Mr. Prest.
Master A threatened.
She's mine. Direct your questions to me and only me.
Mr. Prest didn't move.
Why? Why?
Master A spluttered.
Why should I command you to stop talking to my slave?
He stood up with his fists on the table.
Because she's mine, and whatever answers you think you see are lies. You're afraid she'll tell me things about you that will stop this business arrangement.
Wrong. He's afraid I'll tell you that I want you to kill him. He's afraid I'll give you the final piece of me that I refuse to give to that bastard.
She will tell you nothing, either good or bad.
Forcing himself to relax, Master A slid back into his seat.
But that's beside the point. You're right. I offered Pimlico in friendship, and you have full right to do what you want, whatever ensures our mutual interest in business.
His smile was a shock.
Nothing else matters.
For 5 achingly long seconds, Mr. Press didn't accept the olive branch. Testosterone swirled across the table. At least Daryl, Tony, and Monty stayed out of it.
Sometimes it isn't what's spoken that is the loudest reply, Mr. Osbjorn.
Mr. Prest muttered.
And I've just learned all I needed without your slave uttering a single syllable.
Master A lost interest in his dinner.
What are you saying?
Mr. Prest glanced at me, his charcoal eyes looking like hunters in the dark.
I'm not saying anything, just like Pimlico.
With graceful precision, he wrapped strong fingers around my wrist. I stiffened. He had more power and danger in his left hand than Master A did in his entire blonde body. He hummed with authority that terrified, but also encouraged me to move closer, hoping he'd use that power to protect me. Lies. All of it. He wouldn't protect me. I shook my head free from such stupid thoughts. Mr. Press suddenly removed his touch, free in my wrist. I had the awful sensation he'd been counting my pulse, not just holding me for the sake of touching. Could he feel how fast my heart galloped? Could he see the terror and desperation in my gaze? Never looking away, he placed his hands back into his lap and clasped them tightly together, as if he didn't trust himself to let go of whatever restraint he held.
Eat, Pim. Our conversation is over, for now.
My breathing turned shallow. His lingering touch threatened me. I wasn't stupid not to recognize how dangerous he was, but there was a hidden safety, too. It whispered that if he hurt me, he'd help me at the same time. I just didn't know how. He was a contradiction, a conundrum, something fascinating I couldn't figure out. Slowly, the atmosphere at the table resumed its tentative calmness. The men returned to their dinner. I did too. After all, I wouldn't waste good food. My eyelids fluttered as my taste buds finally worked, signaling to my brain how rich and delicious the piece of duck was as I placed it on my tongue. Tony, Daryl, and Monty were their usual gross selves with no manners, and Master A remained on his best behavior. But he couldn't hide the fact he hated my position at the table. Whatever nutrition I earned would most likely come scowling back up my throat when he kicked me in the guts later. The thought was almost enough to stop me eating, but not quite. Meekly, I dropped my gaze. Boldly, I took another bite. I couldn't stop what he'd do to me, but I would give my system every inch of vitamins and sustenance as possible.
I changed my mind.
Mr. Press said quietly, leaning closer.
I want to know about the mute girl called Pimlico.
His voice, like molasses and candy, salty crisps and decadent chocolate. His body scalded me, not because he was hot, but because his proximity set off all sorts of warnings in my blood. Sneaking a quick glance, I met his gaze as he brazenly stared. Where did he come from? What nationality? What country? And who named him Elder? He wasn't old or the leader of some sect. Or he could be, for all I knew. What the hell is he doing mixing with this riffraff? Master A narrowed his eyes in my direction. I knew that look. He wanted me to reply. For so long, he expected I'd slip and unwittingly speak. For the first few months, it'd been hard trading my ingrained desire to communicate when asked a direct question, to ignore the pull to respond. But over time, it'd gotten easier. But even this handsome, dangerous stranger wouldn't break my silent armor. Taking another bite, I deliberately dropped my gaze, letting him win the staring contest but losing the battle to make me talk. The fire burning inside kept me fighting, even when I wanted to give up. Only I knew how bad my life had become. But something, oh my God, was it pride? Hated that Mr. Prest saw a skinny, scarred girl who couldn't escape. He'd never seen me in a dress with pretty hair or perfect makeup. Never heard me answer professors with wit and intelligence. Never saw me dance and entertain chairmen of charities, and probe the psychology of my fellow counterparts, just like my mother had taught me. Who I was never existed for Mr. Prest. He only saw what I was now. He'd leave and forever remember me as a slave, not a free girl. I scoffed, chewing my final piece of duck. As if. He'll forget about you the minute he departs. Sometimes, my ego could still hurt me. Even now.